What happens when one of the most controversial figures in Silicon Valley gives filmmakers a front row seat to her downfall? Welcome to the world of You Can See Everything.
I'm Leah, genuinely buzzing. This one is mysterious and complicated in the best way.
I'm Garrett, super eager to dig in today. Laid back learning with Leah and Garrett.
Topic on the table, You Can See Everything. An American documentary about Elizabeth Holmes, the founder of the defunct health tech company Theranos. It's directed by Nathan Fielder and Lance Oppenheim, and it got people talking fast. Quick story. I followed the Theranos saga pretty closely back in the day. Court filings, interviews, the whole rise and collapse. It hooked me on documentaries that capture real-life scandals as they unfold. So when I heard Holmes actually invited a film crew in the tense weeks before prison, I was like, no way. Usually people go quiet then, and that angle alone made me lean in.
All right, let's set the stage for this one. You Can See Everything is a 2026 American documentary. The subject is Elizabeth Holmes, whose company Theranos collapsed after it was revealed their blood testing tech didn't work as promised, and she was convicted of defrauding investors. Here's the unusual twist. Holmes invited directors Nathan Fielder and Lance Oppenheim to film her right before she reported to federal prison, and then they kept following her for 3 years. That's a long view of a very volatile moment.
The premise, in plain terms. Imagine you're packing a suitcase for the most consequential trip of your life, and you let someone put a camera on your shoulder while you do it. That's the kind of proximity we're talking about. It's like handing over your front door key during a storm. You get the raindrops and the drafts, not just the neat living room tour after the weather clears.
And because this is an A24 release, A24 being a film distributor known for carefully staged rollouts, the presentation is very considered. It's also in English, which fits the American production context and makes it straightforward for US theaters and festivals. So the setup is intimate access, extended timeline, and a distributor that likes to build curiosity with control. That's pretty cool, right?
Let's unpack the timeline a bit. The film is co-directed by Nathan Fielder and Lance Oppenheim. Fielder appears on camera in a deadpan style, deadpan meaning an intentionally flat, almost expressionless delivery that can make things feel ironic or probing. Oppenheim, a documentary filmmaker, brings a different nonfiction sensibility. Together, they were announced on this project as a 2026 title, which already framed it as a significant release when word first got out.
Then came the Telluride Film Festival. That's a high-profile festival in Colorado, and the film premiered there in September 2026 as a secret screening. Secret screening meaning the audience didn't know which film they were about to see. Attendees had to surrender their phones to prevent leaks. That level of hush-hush made the room feel like a vault, dialing up intrigue and keeping first reactions anchored to that particular crowd and moment.
Same day, A24 confirmed a theatrical release for October 2026 and dropped a teaser trailer. That synchronized reveal is classic event-style strategy. It rides the festival buzz, offers a taste, but still keeps details scarce, like giving you a keyhole view and saying, "Trust us, there's more in the next room."
Zooming in on Holmes's choice to invite the cameras. That's a rare move for someone about to start a sentence. It's a moment when most people shut the blinds. Inviting a crew sets up a question of agency, who gets to steer the story. Once cameras enter, control can shift because the footage becomes a shared space between the subject and the filmmakers. That tension is the backbone of this documentary.
Middle chapter of the story. Before reporting to prison, Holmes was living through the aftermath of her conviction for defrauding investors. The documentary situates us in those final days of freedom, and then follows the developments over 3 years. That leap from immediate crisis to long-term reflection is unusual. It's like seeing the dress rehearsal, opening night, and the show's long run. Same character, different stages, and new choices every time.
Nathan Fielder's on-camera role matters here. With that deadpan interviewer presence, he blurs the line between a straight Q&A and something more self-aware. It nudges both the subject and the viewer to notice performance. Reflexive moments. The film shows its own process at times, and that can make you ask, am I watching Disclosure or choreography? And honestly, I like when a film lets me puzzle that one out.
There's also the Amanda Seyfried angle. Seyfried is an actress who portrayed Holmes in the scripted miniseries The Dropout. Reports from the premiere said she features substantially in the documentary, though what counts as substantial can be debated. Either way, her presence adds a meta layer, fictional portrayal meeting nonfiction subject. It invites a compare and contrast about what performance captures versus what observational footage reveals.
Right, and that comparison can be clarifying. A scripted series condenses and interprets. A documentary observes and assembles reality, even if it knows reality can be staged when a camera's around. Seeing both side by side challenges us to separate myth from mannerism, or admit they're braided together more tightly than we think.
End stretch. The reception out of Telluride was positive, with early notes emphasizing how close the filmmakers got to Holmes. Variety's Owen Gleiberman, he's a longtime film critic, framed the movie as operating in this enigmatic space where reality, performance, deception, and even mental health questions overlap. That's not a diagnostic claim. It's his critical lens on the movie's ambiguity. The takeaway is that the film invites uncertainty as part of the experience.
And A24's date, October 2026, keeps the momentum tight. You go from a surprise premiere straight into a fall theatrical window, which is prime time for high-profile documentaries. The teaser trailer drops the same day as the festival unveiling, so the marketing rhythm is one controlled beat. No leaks, one clear message, quick handoff to theaters. Yeah, that checks out.
The long-term implications of that three-year follow-up are big. It means we might see how a public narrative settles, where accountability lands, and how someone reframes their story over time. It's like watching sediment drift and then harden. The layers become visible only if you wait long enough.
Here's a tough question. If Holmes invited the filmmakers and knows the camera is there, can the access really give us unguarded insight into her life, or are we seeing a carefully managed performance with just enough vulnerability to feel candid?
Real talk, I think it can be controlled. When someone is skilled at image making, crafting how you appear to the public, the camera becomes a tool. Invite the crew, set the tone, choose what rooms they enter. Even if it looks intimate, it might be curated intimacy. And in a pre-prison moment, the incentive to shape your legacy is strong.
I hear that, but I'm going to push back a little. 3 years is a long time. Longitudinal footage, observed over an extended period, it tends to catch inconsistencies. People forget lines they rehearsed. Life throws curveballs. And Fielder's deadpan, plus Oppenheim's eye, might draw out micro moments, a look, a pause, something that cuts against the script. Do you think time itself can crack a performance, even a disciplined one?
Maybe. But why would time guarantee truth if the subject stays strategic? If I'm playing a role and I know the camera returns, I can stick to the role, right? I'm not saying the film won't find anything real. I'm saying the presence of a camera doesn't turn off the instinct to manage what's shown. That's close to the heart of it for me.
Fair point. I'd argue the film's reflexive tone helps. When an interview style highlights performance, it can make performing harder, or at least more visible. And outside events over 3 years can force recalibration, which the film might catch. Even if Holmes aims for control, the documentary can turn that act of control into the subject itself.
I can get behind that idea. My remaining caution is about the rollout. The secret screening and device surrender at Telluride, device surrender means you hand in your phone to stop leaks. Those moves mirror the film's theme of controlling what gets out and when. Does that echo inside the movie too, or does the movie subvert it? That's what I'm looking for.
Totally fair. Strategy outside doesn't pre-decide the art inside. Sometimes the tightest embargo protects the most challenging work. So for me, the question is less did she control it, and more how plainly does the film show that contest for control? If it shows the tug of war, that's insight.
Switching gears a little. Pop culture overlap. The Dropout is the scripted miniseries about Holmes with Amanda Seyfried in the lead. Because Seyfried appears here as herself, we have a crossover between fiction and nonfiction. That highlights Holmes's cultural imprint. She's not just a business figure, she's become a character people recognize, even if they met her first through a performance rather than direct footage.
And when the documentary places Seyfried near the real Holmes narrative, it hands viewers a mirror. It nudges you to compare choices, a dramatization made, with what the camera captures now. It's a reminder that stories don't end at verdicts. They keep getting told, retold, and contested across formats. Counterfactual time. What if Elizabeth Holmes had declined to invite any cameras before prison? No access, no pre-sentencing footage. What kind of movie would we get then?
We'd probably see a distant, archival-driven documentary. Archival. It leans on past material like news clips, interviews already aired, and official records. The film might rely on experts and analysts to fill in blanks, fewer raw moments and more voiceover context. It could still be strong, but the emotional temperature would be cooler.
Without that intimate window, I think the spine shifts to process. Court timelines, filings, maybe diagrams of how Theranos operated. You'd have talking heads explaining the legal journey. Talking heads meaning people interviewed for commentary. The tone becomes more textbook, less fly on the wall, less here's the breath before a door closes, and more here's what that closed door means in context.
And you lose the possibility of evolution across 3 years with the same subject. The longitudinal thread would be thinner. No moments of contradiction revealed by time, just retrospective synthesis. You'd understand the case better, maybe, but you'd feel the person less. That's a trade-off.
Marketing would likely shift too. Without sensitive new footage, there's less need for ultra-secrecy. No device surrender theatrics, fewer surprises to spring at a festival. It would be more of a steady information build than a controlled burst.
So with access, the film can chase contradictions and capture how self-narration changes under pressure. Without access, the film stands back and triangulates truth from the paper trail. Both can work. But the version we have aims to turn proximity into insight, which is bold. Whether it succeeds fully is the question the release will answer over time. All right, that ties it up nicely. Stay curious, keep asking why, and keep an open mind when a story seems settled on the surface.
So there we have it. You can see everything has layers worth pulling on. Thanks for the chat, and let's keep exploring new perspectives next time.